This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Okay. We're going to just do plain and simple Chumash Rashi tonight, nothing fancy at all. The verses that we're going to be dealing with are from verse 26. Vayomer Elokim, and God said, Nase Adam betzameinu kidmuseinu. Let us make man in our image, in our form and in our image. Veyirdu bidgat hayam uv'of hashamayim, and they will rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the heaven, uvavhema uv'chol ha'aret, and over the animals and all of the land, uv'chol ha'remes ha'romes al ha'aret, and all the creepy things that creep over the land. Vayivra Elokim et ha'adam b'tzalmo, and God created man in his image. Betelem Elokim barato, in the image of God he created him. Zachar nekeva baraotam, he created the male and female. What are the difficulties on these two psukim?
The use of the
plural. Right. Let us make is a difficulty. That's what you mean. Let us make man.
Yeah.
Now, did you pick that up yourself, or have you heard someone to talk about it, or you, that you picked up yourself as a difficulty? Very good. What else? What's wrong with that? What's wrong with that? That's a very good question. That's the most important question altogether. It says here he made them, we're talking on the sixth day of creation now. He made them male and female. And later on, everybody knows we have the whole story of how God said, oh, poor Adam's all on his own, and let's put him to sleep, and we'll take out his rib, and we'll make a woman out of it, and all the rest of it. But here we're told, Zophar and Akeba borrow some. He created them already male and female. That's one of the basic, one of the big difficulties. That's also right. It talks in the singular and then it talks in the plural. Does it translate it that way as well in the English? Male and female, he created them, right. Plain and simply bad grammar. Right, these are the difficulties that Rashi is going to solve for us. If you look on the printed sheets that I've just given you, the top paragraph, the second last line, Nase Adam. Says Rashi, Afal Pi Shelot Siyaehu Biyatzirato, even though they, that means the angels, because this plural, Brian, that you pointed out, is talking to the angels, obviously. There's nobody else to talk to. So he must have been talking to his angels. Rashi's question then is, but what does he have to talk to the angels for? What have they got to do with it? They didn't create man. So says Rashi, Afal Pi Shelot Siyaehu Biyatzirato, even though the angels did not assist God in the creation of man, and furthermore, this is the important part, v'yesh makom lemini melirdos, and it gives a place for disbelievers to question the Torah, because the obvious, there used to be a time when even the apikursim used to really have class. I'm just trying to remember a story that illustrates that very beautifully. I don't remember with whom it was. I don't remember with whom it was. Some Rav in Lithuania went into somebody's home. I suppose he was collecting for a yeshiva. And the man, the balabos, took great pleasure in telling the Rav that I'm an apikurs. Don't come and collect money from me. I'm an apikurs. Does anybody not know what an apikurs is? Has anybody not met an apikurs? You don't know what an apikurs is? Apikurs is somebody who denies the essential beliefs of Judaism, of Yiddishkeit.
Is there any such
Yeah, there's plenty. And he said, yeah, he said, I'm an Epicurus, don't come and bother me. So he says, you're an Epicurus at least, where and what and why? And they discussed and they talked, and after an hour or so the rabbi said to the Balabos, he says, you know, talk about an Epicurus, call yourself an Epicurus. You're not an Epicurus, you're just an Amoritz. You're just ignorant. Really, Yiddishkeit, and we're going to see that a little bit later on as well, the most abhorrent thing to Judaism is ignorance. That's the one thing we have no time for at all. Epicurus, we don't like it. And we fight it. But an Epicurus, at least you can fight. You can argue with him. You can do something with him. An ignoramus, you can do nothing. That's it. And he's dangerous also. An Epicurus isn't dangerous because everybody knows him. He's the Epicurus. So you keep away from him. He's not an authority. He doesn't claim to be an authority. He sits on Shabbos and he smokes his cigarette and he says he doesn't believe in Shabbos. Okay, don't believe in Shabbos. You don't believe in Shabbos. You're not a danger to the Jewish community. But ignorant people are dangerous because they don't know that they're ignorant. That's one of the worst parts of ignorance, is that the first area in which the ignorance expresses itself is about the person himself. The first thing he doesn't know is that he's ignorant. That's the basis of ignorance. And that's when it becomes dangerous. He says things which are wrong. And he says them with authority, still an Amoritz. He doesn't. An Amoritz talks with authority. An Epicurus doesn't. But an Amoritz talks with authority. And an Amoritz is something that we'll discuss about him a little bit later on still. Amoritzus, ignorance, is something that we don't tolerate at all, because there cannot be from Yiddishkeit, there cannot be general Yiddish, genuine Yiddishkeit where there's ignorance. It's just not possible. This is too sophisticated. It's like letting an ignorant person into a nuclear reactor and say, look, it's very simple, all you need is a bit of common sense. Run the thing, organize it, do what you want. It's dangerous. Nobody would think of doing that. And certainly we wouldn't go to a person who isn't a qualified person and ask for his opinion, but on Yiddishkeit everybody gives their opinion. And then what they start doing is, this is the worst thing, because the hardest part of Yiddishkeit is learning. That's the most difficult part. Once you've learned, it's easy to keep. Once you understand something, it's easy to keep it. So the most difficult part is to understand it, to learn it, to understand the depth of what you're learning. That's the hardest part. So obviously that's where there's the most resistance. People don't want to learn. So what do? You don't like to walk around looking like an Amoritz. So there are two things in front of you. You've either got to dress up like a knowledgeable person, or you've got to become a knowledgeable person. To become a knowledgeable person takes 20 years of hard work. So who's going to volunteer for that? So what the typical Amoritz does is, he dresses up like a knowledgeable person. By dressing up, I don't mean necessarily physically dressing up, but he assumes the mannerisms of somebody very knowledgeable. And he starts davening with his talus over his head, and he starts shuckling a lot in his davening, and he assumes this aura, and he walks with a bit of a bent in his walk, a little bit of a stoop, and he takes on an atmosphere and an expression as if he's carrying the troubles of the world on his shoulder, and all of a sudden he starts being taken as the person to consult on all matters Jewish. This is, after all, the authority. Why? He looks like it. He plays the part. Those are the people we've got to be careful of. Those are the Amoratsim. But the Epicurusim in the olden days used to be classy. They used to know the whole of Shas. They weren't Amoratsim. One has to be able to discriminate between an Epicurus and an Amoritz. An Amoritz, we have no time for whatever. An Epicurus, you know, we there's a certain admiration for him. It's a funny thing. In the Gemara, there are some very colorful conversations reported between various Tanoim and Amoraim, various rabbinic personalities, between them and Epicurusim. And they're interesting. They're very interesting discussions. They engaged in conversation with Epicurusim, and sometimes some interesting results emerge from such a conversation. But you'll never find the conversation in the Gemara between a Talmud Chacham and an Amoritz. We're instructed by law, by din of the Torah, keep away. It doesn't say keep away from Epicurus, it says Dama Lahashiv Epicurus. So an Epicurus, you've got to know how to answer him. You've got to be able to engage in conversation with an Epicurus. You don't keep away from him, you deal with him. But an Amoritz, keep away from him. We're not allowed to allow our children to marry Amoratzim. We're not allowed to have meals with Amoratzim. We're not allowed to talk to Amoratzim. We're not allowed to socialize with Amoratzim. Not at all. Goyim, yes. Non-Jews, fine. Epicurism, yes, you don't like it, but okay. Amoratsim, no. That's it. We have no time for Amoratsis. The Epicurism, they used to know the whole of Tanakh, they used to know the whole of Shas. They were people of stature, although they were disbelievers. And they would only, in conversation, they would always, and one sees this from these conversations that I've told you that are reported in the Gemara, they would try and prove their atheism from the Torah itself. That's the funny thing about a Jewish Epicurus. You would think an Epicurus is a man who says, I don't accept the Torah. No, that's an Amoritz, a man who says, I don't accept the Torah. Because anybody who's learned the Torah admires it. Anybody who's studied this doesn't push it aside and can't say, I don't accept it. So when you come across a man who says, I don't accept the Torah, you know he's an Amoritz, not an Epicurus. An Amoritz, just keep away from him. If he's an Epicurus, if he says, the Torah is wonderful. But then he'll try and justify his actions from within the Torah itself. Now what's the first place that Epicurus is going to go to? These words. Na'aseh Adam. We shall make a man. You see, there's more than one God. In your own Torah it says so. That's how the Epicurus will try and work. Now we have a difficulty. For whatever reason God had for writing the Torah in this way, in the plural, let's say he's using royal plural, which is one of the suggested answers. It's strange because everywhere else he doesn't use it. It's difficult enough, but let's say he's using the royal plural. It's still not a clever thing to do to use the royal plural when you could use the singular, and using the royal plural is going to cause trouble with biblical critics. They're going to pounce on this and they're going to make trouble for us forever. That's not a very clever thing to do. So what reason could God have had for using Naseh, using the plural, even though he must have foreseen the problems of biblical criticism that were going to arise out of this very statement? Let's see what Rashi tells us. So says Rashi, Af api shelo siya'eyu b'yitzirato, even though they didn't help him in the creation, v'yesh mokum l'minim lirdos, and it gives place for the apikursim. Sometimes we use the word min. In Talmudic language, a min is also an apikuris. And it gives place for the minim to cause trouble. Lo nimna hakosuv milalamedecho derech eretz umidas anova. The Torah does not stop itself from teaching you derech eretz and modesty, teaching you how to be a mensch, even at the expense of giving the apikursim a grounds for their argument. That's the incredible thing here. What's the derech eretz? Sheyehei hagodol nimlach v'noitel reshus min hakosim. We have the first rule of the Torah's course in business management. A manager should consult his subordinates. That's derech eretz. That's it. Things which it's taken, you know, people have debated and debated. You'll go to business school for your MBA there and you'll have discussions. Should they be consulted? Shouldn't they be consulted? Should you tell your subordinates what's going on? Shouldn't? And there are debates and discussions and it goes on and on and on and they never really reach a conclusion. Here you've got it. Yes, you have to. That's derech eretz. That's all. Good business management, bad business management, we don't know, we don't care. The Torah isn't a book of business. What the Torah is a book of menschlichkeit. It teaches you how to be a human being. And the principle as far as relating to one's subordinates is concerned is you bring them into your confidence. You tell them what you do. You consult them. Even if you have no intention of taking their advice, even if they have no say over what you do, you consult your subordinates. That's the din. That's derech eretz. Modesty and it's menschlichkeit. It's derech eretz. Okay, but couldn't have God found an easier way of telling us this principle? Why doesn't God just tell a din, like he says, you shall not murder, and he says, you shall love your neighbor as yourself? Why doesn't he say, you shall consult your subordinates? Finish. Why does God do it in such a dangerous way? What do you think? Why does God do it in this way? Why doesn't he tell us straight up? Makes more of an impression, but it's dangerous. Causing us trouble. It has caused us trouble throughout the ages, these words. So much so that when the 70 Chachomim of the Septuagint, remember, which we learned on Wednesday night, translated the Torah, this is one of the places where they changed the translation, and they translated this in the Greek. You'll find this in the original Greek, you'll find this in the first person plural, and in some early English translations, in the first person singular, and in some early English translations, those that are taken from the Greek and not from the Hebrew, you also find it in the first person. So worried were they that this could cause trouble that they actually changed it in the translation. So why did God do this? What do you say, Mark? Okay, that's still not dangerous. So you've explained why it's in a roundabout way. That's correct. The Torah wants us to study, to learn these things out. But why in such a dangerous place? Why does God enter onto the border of causing apikrusis in the world for the sake of teaching us this little lesson, which he could have taught us in many other ways?
Maybe he likes to also give the apikrusis a chance.
Yeah, it's not altogether wrong. Not altogether wrong. But to that, what would you say? Hoping? Yeah, that's how we relate to the apikoros altogether. But why use such a word? Why use the first plural singular here? So Rashi, the first person plural. Rashi's told us to teach derech eretz. The question is, but why do it? It doesn't really answer the question. He's telling us, in addition, it teaches derech eretz, but it doesn't answer the question of why God used this word, isn't it? What do you think? Yeah, you're right, but it could have told us somewhere else, not in such a dangerous place. You know what? The Torah wants to tell you, an apikoros who's a mensch is better than somebody who isn't an apikoros and isn't a mensch. The Torah wants to tell you there's no point in not being an apikoros if you're not going to be a mensch as well. God wants to tell you, I'm prepared to risk apikoros for the sake of menschlichkeit, because menschlichkeit comes first. Doesn't help being a believer and not being a mensch. That's it. A man who doesn't consult his subordinates is not a frum man. That's it. Finished.